everyone. It is I, the show's main host and frontman, the Reverend Godfather, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. And today we're going to talk about a few things. This episode might not be that long. It might actually be under 15 minutes. But then again, I've been wrong before. Look at Otacon, last week's episode. Speaking of which, I do have some news about that. But first, while it's still fresh in my mind, this Sunday evening, I just came back from the theater, maybe about an hour or so ago, and I saw The Dark Tower. And granted, a lot of you have been with this show, listening to the show, over the past couple of months, you heard me talking about this show and how scared I was about this show. And that the fact that I was kind of happy that Ron Howard was the director of this movie. And I'll tell you this right now, I still am. With what he did a brilliant job directing this movie. I have no qualms with what he did in reference to directing and gearing the story in reference to the movie. I will say this, again, yeah, Stephen King kind of did his best fire, you know, control type of thing, because overall, this movie is about as close to the books as World War Z was close to the books. The book. It was a Dark Tower movie in pretty much name only for the most part. The way World War Z was a zombie movie in, for the most part. Let me explain. For those who are not familiar with the book World War Z, first off, I do recommend picking it up. It's a great read. I've been hearing that's an even better audiobook with all the people that read it, with all the celebrities. So I gotta check that out. I want to hear it. But the book is not necessarily, in reference to World War Z, it's not necessarily a novel per se. It's written like someone doing an interview, taking reports about people's individual experience during the zombie apocalypse and what was happening after. It's very well done. Max Brooks is, I believe, the person that wrote World War Z. So he did a wonderful job. But the movie did not match up with the book. It took the story from a completely different route. Some of the characters that were in the book might have had an appearance, name only, in the aspect of the movie. From what I remember of World War Z, there was only a couple of lines that matched up with the book, but with this, with The Dark Tower, I'm just trying to give you folks some context here. With this, it's with, let me backtrack. Max Brooks pretty much said, yes, this is the best thing in reference to the movie, yada yada yada. Granted, he was paid probably a lot of money for the rights to the movie. It's his job to hype the movie. Same thing with Stephen King. He has one of his books made into a TV show, or a movie, or a miniseries, or, you know, so forth and so on. It's his job to kind of explain it and kind of hype it up. And that's his job. After, you know, at this point. And Stephen King's words were that this is, for those who are familiar with the Dark Tower series, that that there are other worlds, other dimensions, and other universal parallels. Kind of explaining why Roland was played by, gotta pause this. By, I know I'm butchering his name, Aldris Elba, who played, you know, in Thor, he played the Rainbow Bridge Guardian. He was very good in this, I'm going to say that. So did Matthew McConaughey, playing the Man in Black. Both did a fabulous job, but Stephen King said the reason why Miss Elba was playing Roland is just that it takes a place. The movie takes place in a kind of a different dimension that kind of parallels Roland's dimension. Kind of playing off the differences. There were a lot of Easter eggs in this. The Easter eggs were very book heavy. It didn't follow the book. If it did follow the book, people would probably be very, 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 very confused. I'm happy with what they did. Again, Ron Howard did a fabulous job. I think the reason why a lot of people have a lot of... I did not hate this movie. As a standalone movie, if you're not really a fan of Stephen King or you haven't really read the books, it's kind of... the movie is way different, but it's very information heavy. Not as heavy as something like Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, but there's a lot of meat to this story. Because the aspect of the Dark Tower doesn't just tie in with the seven books. It ties in with Stephen King's It. It ties in with Insomnia. It ties in with Dreamcatcher. Ties in with a whole plethora of other of Stephen King's works. You see everything, you know, once you start reading his books, it ties into the Dark Tower series. So each one's kind of a branch off. For the comic book fans, it's like reading, Civil War, and then picking up a lot of the side books, you see the side books and it explains the story a little bit more, or you see a lot of the Easter eggs in the main storyline in the side books and vice versa. There were a lot of Easter eggs that for the Stephen King fans, meaning there, you see, I'm not spoiling anything story wise. In one point, there. In Roland's world, mid-world, they walk by a kind of an abandoned amusement park, and it's the Pennywise amusement park, kind of giving a nod to Stephen King's It. There's a lot of stuff that only Stephen King fans and fans of the Dark Tower series will get a lot of the nods, like the Dixie Pig. There is a kind of a rusted out train, it looks like, with a face on it, which is kind of correlation with some of the later books. I think book 3, and beginning of book 4. A lot of it, the bulk of the story takes place in book 3, book 4. Not so much book 4, maybe a little bit of the tail end of book 4, but it's book 3, maybe hints at book 5, book 6, and book 7, but that's about it. And it centers primarily again with Jake and Roland. Jake's mental abilities in this are brought up in books 5, mostly in book 5, 6, and book 6, in reference to him being kind of special in that way, meaning he has the ability to read minds, so forth and so on. There are other nods. Let's see, there was a Christine nod, a Cujo nod, a Shining nod. There was a lot of just hidden stuff that you had to be a fan of Stephen King over the years and just to pick up and not kind of attach to. And also the whole aspect of the number 19. Just that I don't know exactly why they strayed away from different aspects like the doors and everything else. I do recommend reading the Dark Tower series, but if you don't have the time to read, but if you're sitting at a desk most of the time, or you do a lot of traveling via car, pick up the audiobooks. You could find them somewhere. I think Uncle Tony might have a copy of the audiobooks sitting around somewhere that he could give you a copy and let you guys listen to. Just search around the usual spots for them. You'll find them. But overall, if you don't really look at it as a book, movie adaptation of a book series. It's pretty good, but it does have its issues, and it, for the most part, it's slow in spots and speeds up. But overall, I'm going to give it probably a 6 out of 10, maybe a weak 6 out of 10, because there was a lot of nods, and even to the main book itself, you kind of hear whispers of the man in black went across the desert and the gunslinger followed, which is the first line of the very first Dark Tower book, which is titled The Gunslinger. So it's very, both, again, the acting was very done very well. I think it would have been a little bit, Adris's character in reference to Roland could have been a little bit more stiff, but I think if you played him a little bit more the stiff, he would have came off at like earlier Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator, meaning very, very stiff, very robotic, even though that's how Stephen King kind of characterized Roland, was that very robotic aspect of things, that he came off that way, very, not sociopathic, but very bland, very just, I'm doing my job, I gotta disassociate myself from what's going around here. But some of it didn't work, what they tried to do. I'm kind of blaming the person who tried to do that screen adaptation of this, but I'll say this, this is one of those things that many people would say was in development hell for years and years and years and years, and we kind of got something, but it wasn't the best, because way back when, this, I think it was maybe about 10 years ago or so, maybe at the most 15, when they started doing a lot of getting the ball rolling to get this made. Initially, Ron Howard was the one that was trying to get that ball rolling, and he wanted, from what I remember, he wanted kind of Lord of the Rings type of money, because he wanted to do a true book adaptation of, or as close as he could to the books as he could, and meaning do book one, book two, book three, or take it up with book two, like do a little bit of maybe book one and book two, then do the rest as a TV series. But this is one of the, but a lot of the studios turned to Ron Howard and said, we don't want to give you Lord of the Rings type of money. We would rather, meaning instead of giving him, Ron Howard wanted maybe like $200-300 million and do all three films real quick. I won't say real quick, but kind of that type of format of how Peter Jackson did Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit series. Kind of, let me do this all in one shot over the course of a year, film all three, cut them out, cut them up, edit them, put them out one each year, and if each one is successful, I'll do reshoots if need be, for the second movie and the third movie, that way we could have everything said and done. But a lot of the distribution houses like Sony and Miramax were saying, we don't want to give you the $200 million to do all three movies. We want to give you something like $50 million. Yeah, I'm lowballing the amount, but that's what what I got out of the articles I was reading at the time, where Ron Howard wanted the $150 million, $200 million, $300 million to do all three, but a lot of the groups, the distribution groups like Sony and Warner Brothers, were going, nope, we don't want to give you $300 million to do all three. We want to give you $50 million to do all three. And Ron Howard said, I can't do it for that much. What are you, crazy? But I do have a lot of respect for Ron Howard. He tried his best. He did weave a very good story, and he tried to give something for the fans. I'll say that with what he did, and try to make something for the fans, saying, "Hey, we're trying to give you as close to the book as we can." I can't fault him for that, and he did a good job. The actors did a very good job. I think were there problems? Were there issues? Yes, Jake was too old. I could literally say Jake was way too old. The person who played Roland was black. He should be white. They should have got Clint Eastwood's son, Scott Eastwood. I could have went on and on and on and on and on about every little thing. But, and I know there are some of you out there who can complain, saying, "Rev, you bitched and complained about the Ghostbusters remake." That's different, and I'm not going back into that cesspool of hate, because that was last year. And if you want to visit my thoughts about that cesspool of hate, please go to our main site, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, and go back about a year or so. And I believe Ghostbusters was in the title. So please look out and listen to it to see why I did not look, like that movie, why there was hate, why I didn't, and everything else. But this is a different matter. I am a Dark Tower fan. I am a Stephen King fan. I'm rereading the Dark Tower series, but it's my go-to series of books, like some people are Harry Potter. I think they did an all right job. It was way too short. It was an hour and a half. It should have been closer to 2 hours, if not a little bit more. But that could have been one of those issues where that too much, or it being too long, could have probably did more damage to the storyline, to the aspect of the film, where, oh, we wanted it to be 2 hours, and it was 2 hours of complete shit. So they cut it down to about an hour and a half. That way it's an hour and a half of shit instead of 2 hours worth of shit. Now, to break things up, because I will go into a little bit of the DuckTales and Defenders, but I want to break it up and revisit Otacon, because a couple of news things came out recently, and a couple of things, like most conventions, a lot of stuff, sometimes a lot of the bitterness, and a lot of times a lot of stuff comes out later, after the con is done, like maybe a day or two after. You might have heard me mention in last week's episode about a flood or a leak that happened in Artist Alley. There was a leak. I do have a press release from the folks at Otacon concerning what they call the Artist Alley incident. And it says, in case you are unaware, there was an incident within the Artist Alley. I think it was a Friday night, if not Saturday. At 8 p.m., a torrential rainstorm took place. Basically, what it goes on is saying that a lot of places like the convention center in D.C., Walmart, a lot of Walmarts have this. Maybe your own place of business has this. To help drain off rainwater from the roof, there's drains, and they drain into pipes, and the pipes lead down to either the sewer system or like a gutter system for the roof. And what happened was, there was a leak. What happened was, one of the pipes that was there, this was due to the backup water from the roof drainage system. One of those pipes kind of failed. And what happened was, it burst. Like I said, it failed. A lot of word was coming out during this time saying that it was sewage, it was a gas leak, it was this and that. No, it was just plain old rainwater. Was there any contaminant, or whatever was on the roof, dirt, dust, smog stuff that might have been settled on the roof. That might have been included in it. So, it might have been a little stinky. But it wasn't sewage. It said within a couple hours, by the time, due to the evacuation, there was a slip and fall incident, and there was a sprained ankle incident. That was it. Yes, it says one reporting a twisted an ankle, another one fell. They were checked out by EMTs and were released. Everybody was okay. There might have been some flood damage to a couple of the booths, but nothing major. And that's all it was. I'm not reading this email verbatim, but that was it. By the time the next day started, everything was nice and dry. Everybody had a good time. But the other thing that came out was there was an incident. I think it might have been, if not late Friday evening, like early Friday evening, if not sometime on Saturday. There was an incident with a YouTuber. I wouldn't say a big YouTuber, but I'm going to say this. When it comes to a YouTube channel, he has 24 subscribers. I barely have 4 for the show. But he was in D.C. recording something either for his channel, if he was part of a actual recording place or a studio or a recording team to record a TV show, a news group, or something like that. He did not specify in his YouTube, and the YouTube title of the video was "I Got Thrown Out of Otakon." And basically, what happened was he started out the video saying, "Hey, we're doing some video. We heard about this anime convention going on in DC. We don't know about this. So, well, we're going to check it out. What's it called?" And the guy behind the camera filming everything says, "It's Otakon." And he proceeds to say, "Maybe we'll see some..." It's kind of hard to say if the gentleman was trolling or anything like that. I might put a link to the dude's video. As much as a lot of people will be hearing this saying, "Oh, you're just giving this fucker attention." But I have to show at least context as to what happened. But he goes to the convention center, all the while saying, "I'm going to maybe see some hot chicks." This person, when he said that, you could tell that he's never been to a convention in his life. And for some of you out there, a convention is not, it's open to the public, meaning anybody and their uncle and aunt can go buy a ticket and attend. They will not deny anybody admittance to a convention, which means you could buy a ticket. The only time they're going to tell you no is that if you're being an asshole or a dick, you know, someone being extremely rude, causing a disruption, or doing something that is illegal, immoral, that, you know, harassing the attendees, harassing the guests, that stuff, they'll, you know, say, "No, you can't be here, you're being a bully, you're being harassing, whatever, please leave." And to continue, what happens is, he goes to the convention, he goes through the front door, the people that were at that door didn't ask to see if he didn't have a pass around his neck, neither the regular pass or something saying press pass on it. Basically, my ticket, for those who've seen the Instagram picture that was also shared to our Facebook page, it was the pass that everybody had, which was a lanyard plastic pass, and press had a special little attachment, a cloth attachment to the bottom that said press. So that was the press pass. Normal ticket had holders just had the normal pass. But he got in. No one said, "Hey, do you have a pass?" or anything like that. He went in, got his bag checked, because that was the standard procedure of the show. From then, he was walking around, taking pictures, talking to some of the people, a lot of the people in the cosplay. Some of it seemed a little bit creepy. He didn't really get caught until he wandered into the photographer's area. And this is something I didn't tell you guys last week. There was an area in the convention set up for the professional photographers. Or people with the expensive $300 DSLR type cameras. The area was set up for those who were in cosplay and they wanted professional or something close to professional photography done for their outfits. I don't blame Otacon. And plus, they had a computer set up to do the photo editing there on site. I don't know Otacon's procedures in reference to this area, but from what I gathered, that because I was press, I was more than welcome to be in this area and be a part of this environment, which means if I had a DSLR camera or one of the higher end cameras that are out there and I wanted to edit my photos for the show before I put them up on Instagram or put them up on our Facebook page, I would probably been more than welcome to do so. There were probably a few steps I had to go through, though. But because of this and because of this person's partner recording video, there was a lot of minorities, kids, being their video taken and photos taken without explicit permission. Now, this is a touchy area. You heard me speak about this prior. Because there are many people that believe that there's several type of people when it comes to filming or recording children. And me and Earl kind of agreed with each other when this issue happened with the Chocolate Festival, that there's several type of people get involved. There's a lot of legality and issues that are involved when it comes to children and recording. Sometimes you have the kids that they would love the fact that they're getting recorded and that their stuff is going to be available for everybody to listen to and or see. And there's the other group that they don't want to be recorded. It's not cool. They don't want to. Then you have the parents to deal with. Whereas you have the parents saying, hey, yes, it's cool, it's great. You have our permission to record our child and put it up on as a audio podcast or a video on YouTube for your YouTube channel. And you have the other group of parents saying, no, we don't want you to exploit our child in this type of manner for your podcast or your YouTube channel. Then you have because it's minors, meaning they're under the legal age, they're 17 and under, which means they are not considered of the legal age of consent, which means if I were to record them for an interview, if their parents were nearby, I would have to ask their parents permission to use the interview for for my podcast and so forth and so on. And I would probably have to get some sort of written consent from the parents because of the whole minor legal, the legality of recording a minor. That's that. And because him and his partner were doing this, Otacon stepped in and said, hey, who are you guys? Why are you here? Why are you in this area? Are you pressed? Do you have a badge? They confronted this person. Now, this is where a lot of people agreed that there was a lot of wrong on both sides. Yes, the YouTuber was a little rude and coming off a little creepy. And the convention staff, the show staff, not convention staff, came off a little blunt and maybe a little bit rude, along with the convention staff should have stopped them, saying, do you have a badge? You got to have a badge. There was no one really saying, why don't you have a badge? Do you want to have a badge? Do you need to get a badge? Please go get a badge. Apparently, from what I gather and my instincts and everything else said, because they wanted him to end his video person recording to see convention management and probably the promoter as well. I think it might have been in regards to him getting a press pass or so forth and so on and seeing his credentials and to, you know, authorize him to at least be there in a more legitimate fashion. I'm going to give Otacon that aspect. But he pulled the dick move in reference to, are you detaining me? Am I being detained? Oh, I'm not. I'll just leave. In that case, yeah, fine. If you're being disruptive, leave. And to sum up, what this person pretty much did was, a lot of people call it ghosting, but it's also known in the convention community as lobby conning. And lobby conning, for those who don't know, is when a lot of conventions like Otacon, everything's set up with, the convention starts legitimately at the door. If you need to purchase a pass or a ticket, you're directed to cons like Otacon, you're directed to where you purchase that particular ticket. You are now not allowed to go any further until you get that ticket. Then you can enjoy the full range of what the convention has offered, from the panels to whatever else is offered. Now, there's other conventions, like, let's take AwesomeCon, where everything, instead of being right at that front door, convention center front door, it's set up right near the convention is actually held. Meaning, the convention floor itself, maybe right in front of that is the ticket booths, the pickups, and everything else. So, everything in front of that is a public spot where people hang out, they take up pictures. That way, the lobby conners, as some of them have been called, they go, they attend the con, but they don't attend the convention itself. They just hang out in the convention center. And what happens is, if this happens a lot, there's a chance that the convention itself loses money, because not that many people are going in and buying tickets. They're just hanging out in front of the door. They're causing problems. They're causing a fire hazard, because especially if the show is being held in a smaller environment, like a hotel or a smaller venue, like a skating rink. That's a toss back to where Matt Burns was holding the earlier four state stuff, but that place didn't really have a lobby, but it did have an open parking lot. But just to use that as an example, if you have a lot of people hanging out in the parking lot and not really going in and paying for the great value of a ticket, $10, to go inside, they're clogging that parking lot. If something happens inside, i.e., God forbid, a fire or somebody gets hurt and there's an ambulance needs to be called, they can't get into that parking lot because the parking lot's too crowded with these lobby conners who are just hanging out there, snagging pictures. Some of these people might actually be okay, decent folk. They're curious to what's going on. They're hanging out. They may be talking to a few of the people in cosplay. They're there to visit friends real quick to, you know, hey, we're going to grab, you know, we're going to go here at the end of the show. When you're done with the show, come hang out with us. That's fine. That's dandy. But you have sometimes you have the creepers that don't really, they do more harm than good. Like this gentleman. Instead of being more polite and saying, sure, I would love to get a ticket, how much are the tickets? Or if there was a little bit more communication between him, the person that, I won't say detained him, but, you know, actually confronted him, saying, hey, let's take you to make sure you get proper credentials. There's that. Now, that's about it. Like I said, I'll put a link to the person's video so you can get context and see what actually happened with him. So, it just was one of those. There were a lot of people saying, we don't need folks like him. And a lot of the comments that were brought up were, we don't, you know, like folks like him. And what I pretty much said, and one of the staffers, this one of the convention staffers, not the higher-ups, one of the people that worked with works with the convention, agreed with me and said, yeah, you're right. And that was the aspect of, we can't tell people, come off like, hey, we can't have this people. We can't have, we don't want people invading our convention. We don't like these people invading our convention. These are our convention. This is my convention. How dare these people come? They're invading our culture. What little do these people who say these things, yeah, you're going to have the creepazoids. You're going to have idiots and assholes like this person, this YouTuber, that did this. Sometimes you have the honest people that it's a mistake, their first time, and I stated that you can't say, by saying we don't, you're invading our convention, you're invading our culture, that's bad. That is, I didn't say it was offensive, I said that is the wrong way to think, wrong thing to say, because there are, for every one of you that love Otakon, love what it offers, there, or I should say, for every 10 of you that love Otakon, love going each year, love sharing the cosplay, love diving deep into anime culture and the fandom, there is going to be another 5, 10, 15 people that are going to Otakon for the first time ever. Otakon is their first time going to a convention. They don't know how it holds the atmosphere of Otakon. It has to be a convention like what Otakon was this year. Has to be a welcoming environment. It has to be, I won't say a happy environment, it has to be a welcoming environment. Like, hey, how you doing? Welcome to Otakon. Come enjoy the show. What's your fan part of anime culture? Are you a fan of? Are you a Pokemon fan? Are you a Yu-Gi-Oh fan? Is it Full Metal Alchemist? Is it Death Note? Is it, you know, Attack on Titan? Is it something completely new? What is it? What do you like about it? That's part of a convention. Plus, you have the people that, not just the fans who this is the first time convention, you have the people who are first time anime fans. They understand that a convention, especially one like Otakon, is a perfect spot to pick up new anime, especially the DVDs that they cannot find, or the collectibles they cannot find anywhere else online. And, or, even though they can find some of the DVDs on Amazon or some collectors on eBay, it's one of the better convention. They understand a convention like Otakon is one of the better places to find more legit and unique stuff than online. So they understand this. It's their learning. They want to fully embrace it and telling people, saying, you're not welcome here. This is our culture, our convention. Go away. You're not welcome here is the worst thing to say. And the person who was the staff said, you're right. I agree with that wholeheartedly. It has to be welcoming. And that's where he said that they're working on, in reference to getting a better air about themselves, being more welcoming. And what this person did was, a lot of things this person did was wrong, that he's going to be talking to in reference to procedures and what needs to be done, especially with the convention center staff, that if they have to be more alert to, hey, do you have a badge? If you don't have a badge, please go to registration and get a badge. That sort of thing. Next up is the DuckTales. I managed to catch the DuckTales remake. It was on YouTube. It was 44 minutes long without commercials. Yes, it was put up online. I honestly, as someone who would say, how dare you ruin my childhood, I can't really say that about this. Honestly, with DuckTales, I'll say this, the voice acting needs a little bit of a tweaking. That's about it. And I'm not a fan of the animation style, but all in all, the theme was there, it had a sizable chunk of what the original series had, the soul of the original series. It had that chunk, it had that soul, or at least part of it, and that's what I liked. And I was sitting like, watching it, like, hey, I'm actually enjoying this. They're giving more, they're doing it a little, they're doing their own style, but a lot of the stuff is on par with the original series, what the original series had, and what they're trying to not only do their own thing, but trying to do something that the original fans have. And I like that. And I'm going to have a rating for that. I'm going to give them a 7 out of 10. A solid 7 out of 10. And lastly, let's talk about the Defenders. As a lot of you know, as of this recording, which is Sunday night, the Defenders dropped on Friday. I didn't get a chance to watch everything on Friday with everything going on Saturday. I think I'm about midway through the season, if you will. I have the remaining season to watch, which I'll probably do after I get done with this. But I am liking what I see so far. They're doing a pretty good job with introducing and trying to bring you each character and watch everything throttle and come together. It was kind of fun watching Luke Cage and Iron Fist fight it out. It was very one-sided, so to speak, until Iron Fist decided to light up and go after, use that option. But the thing is, the problem with it that I see so far is that the Jessica Jones character, she's supposed to be super strong. I mean, really, really strong. And they are not really playing that up too much. Whereas with Luke Cage, him being pretty much, I won't say immortal, but very thick skin, so to speak, that kind of invulnerable to projectiles and so forth and so on, which is very easy. Iron Fist having, you know, the Iron Fist and being a student of martial arts, and Daredevil being, you know, Daredevil with his abilities. Just that Jessica Jones is supposed to be this super, super strong badass. They barely focus on her in reference to that. It's just like, she should be knocking people across the room, and she's not. They ran out of budget with her. Iron Cage knocked people across the room. Iron Fist, Danny Rand, lit up his fist and knocked somebody across the room. Daredevil, Matt Murdock, used his abilities, and he kicked somebody, you know, 15 feet, not necessarily, just did his thing, 15 people all at once, while blindfolded. Jessica Jones, hitting people like somebody off the street. That's it. Like, she was just somebody who just wandered in, I'll help you guys, and just generally was beating people up without them flying across the room the way they should be, in her being that super strong. Mind you, when it's something stupid like, oh, my car's getting towed, break the hook and, you know, put the car back down. Or trying to push somebody through the front windshield of a vehicle. Other than that, they're not showing her powers that much, which I think they should be showing yes, it's a little bit hypocritical for me saying, hey, I'm trying to do that SJW type of thing. I'm not. It's just that they're giving more so the guys, showing off the guy stuff than her, which can, it doesn't seem too balanced. Yet she does have her moments, but it's, hey, what about Jessica? But she's usually her grumpy old self that she doesn't want to do this. She's whatever. I'll probably be giving you guys my final verdict when we have our hostful over the next week or two. Our next hostful will probably be recording next week. So, but still, there's that. So I'll give the final review when I watch the whole series. But since I'm only midway through the series right now, I will. I do like what I see. I like the dynamic. I just want to complete the series before I give you guys and gals my final verdict. But that's that for now. I hope you guys were able to tolerate the whirring in the background, because that was my fan. And if you guys have any questions, emails, or anything like that, over the next couple of weeks as well, I've been trying to keep up with some of the Destiny stuff, and a lot of information is coming out, a lot of it's back and forth, a lot of it's speculation, some of it's leaks, so-called leaks, and it's not leaks, but once everything gets in and done, and I have a copy in my hands, or at least on my hard drive, and start playing it, then I'll give you guys my thoughts on that at some point. But for now, again, hope to see you guys next week. If you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, please send them via, if you want to do it that way, send them via email by using the email longcoatmafia@gmail.com. As I said before, if you want to go back into our archives and listen to our episodes since day one, you could just go up to our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. Or if you want to use a Apple mobile device like a iPhone or a iPod Touch or a iPad, you can just visit Apple Podcasts or use iTunes and subscribe that way. If you use an Android-based device, you could always go to Google Play Music and subscribe that way. If you like what you hear, please leave a review on, at least on iTunes. It does help us. And when you subscribe, you get every episode as soon as I drop them, instead of waiting a couple of days. See, what else? Our Instagram is @LongCoatMafia. Our Twitter is also @LongCoatMafia. I should be putting up some bike night stuff shortly, plus a few other things. I have some, I don't think I have any more archon stuff. It's mostly, bike night, and maybe some stuff from the Eclipse that, depending on when you listen to this, will be Monday. I might put some stuff on Instagram. I got a whole mess of stuff to put up on Instagram, plus my personal page too, but still. We're still working on our YouTube channel, so stick with that. Or if you do watch a lot of YouTube, just go to YouTube, look up Long Coat Mafia Podcast, our show will come up, hit subscribe, and stay tuned. At least this show is available to listen to on YouTube. And that's pretty much it. You guys take care. Hope you guys, if you're listening to this after the eclipse on Monday, the 21st, hope you enjoyed, had fun. Just remember, if you're listening to this on Monday and the eclipse hasn't happened yet, please do not buy any plants. Please do not buy any plants. Reasons. Wait until after. And do not buy anything that looks like a Venus flytrap till after. But either way, take care, folks. Have a good day.
See you next time on the Long Coat Mafia.